So thanks, Mike, for that reading, a particularly tricky one with an awful lot of detail. You'll either be pleased or disappointed that I won't be going verse by verse into what each of the bits of wood or yarn or onyx or anything else meant in this context. You can go away and read about that yourselves. But I want to start with a story of Bob, who was the vicar here a number of years ago, probably about 15 years ago. Many of you will know him. He was infamous. He challenged, surprised, and shocked people, I think, in equal measure. And Ali, my wife, tells a story frequently that sums up his character, his passion, and who he is. Last night, Ali was kind of having a slight panic about whether the story's wholly true or not. But it doesn't really matter because it really illustrates the point I want to make very well. Anyway, Bob, he learned of somebody in the congregation who was in financial need. So he went home, he prayed about it, and he decided, quite simply, he was going to sell his car and he was going to give the money to this person who was in need. So he reasoned that it was the school holidays and that the four kids, weren't going to need to be ferried about quite as much, and so they could do without it over the holidays, and that God would provide. So he did it. And I think that story illustrates some of the key points coming out of the passage today. Are the willingness, God wanting us to be willing to give, God wanting to move our hearts to respond to what he's calling us to do, and God asking us to be willing to be interrupted in our daily lives. So just to go into the passage, it's the fifth in the series on Exodus, about God taking his people out of Egypt to the promised land. And I'm going to look in a bit, in a while, about how the people gave to God. You'll have seen it in the passage, what the people gave to God. But first of all, I actually want to look at why the people gave to God in this instance. A few weeks ago, Henrietta preached about probably one of the biggest collective acts of disobedience in the Old Testament, the golden calf. So Moses had just come down from the mountain. He gave the Israelites lots of instructions. The Israelites had just met God, the only time they've met him face to face. And Moses gave the Israelites lots of commandments about what to do. And in chapter 24, the Israelites said with one voice, everything the Lord had said, we will do. Moses goes up the mountain again to get the Ten Commandments written on stone and to get a whole series of other commandments, the ones we've started to look at now, about how to build the tabernacle. And we know the story of disobedience. We know that the Israelites simply decided Moses had been away too long. They were going to make another god, a golden calf, who would then be the one that would lead them into the promised land. So why is it different this time? And clearly it is very, very different this time. So Exodus spends about five chapters giving the details on how to build the tabernacle. So this is the place where the Ark of Covenant will be, where God's presence will dwell with the people. And then it gives another five chapters, starting in chapter 35, 36, on how the Israelites obeyed exactly all of the instructions that God gave. It's not a particularly fascinating read because the first five chapters are simply repeated but put in the past tense. But the emphasis is that the Israelites obeyed exactly as God had requested them. And then there are instructions about what to bring and instructions about how to build the tabernacle. So why did they do it? What was different? What had changed in just three chapters from chapter 32 to chapter 35? And I think two things had changed, which actually meant that their whole reality had changed. And it was because they'd allowed their hearts to become involved. If we look, if you've got your Bibles, turn with me. We're still on page 94, 95. So Exodus 35, 21, it says that everyone who was willing and whose heart moved him came and brought an offering to the Lord. So their hearts were moved, but why were their hearts moved to obey? And just a couple of things, as I mentioned. First, they were moved to obey because they desperately wanted God's presence with them. After the golden calf incident, God threatens that he won't go with them, but he'll send an angel instead. He tells them to take off their ornaments so that he can decide what to do with them. And here the tension is palpable. It's a moment where their whole world was turned upside down. They feared their identity as God's people was about to change. And I think if you look, many of us who woke up the day after the referendum, whatever way we voted, knew that our whole world had been turned upside down. Imagine that, but 100 times over, because this was the whole identity of the Israelite people. It's a moment when God had let them out of Egypt and said he's only going so this far, and they're on their own from here on in. And they realize here, this is when Moses pleads, that they desperately want God to be with them. So they obey all the instructions to build the Ark of the Covenant, to build the tabernacle, to guarantee that God will go with them all the way to the Promised Land and stay there. And Will Haig preached a few weeks ago that God's plans to build the tabernacle was his decision to dwell with his people. It's often translated as to tabernacle with his people. But I think this was the moment when the people actually decided that it was their decision as well, that they wanted God to be with them, that they didn't want to go anywhere unless God was with them, and they were desperately going to do anything that they could to make sure this happened. I think it's an interesting question for us reading this about how desperate we are for God to be with us. Or do we actually take it for granted sometimes that God said he will always be with us? Well, that's okay, he always will. Do we actively seek, like Moses sought God, and say, if you don't go with us, then don't send us to do this? Secondly, here they were moved to obey because they were grateful they'd escaped God's judgment. When God took the Israelites out of Egypt, he was saving them from oppression, from hunger, from slavery, from not being able to worship their God. In the earlier story, they were clear goodies, the Israelites who were being oppressed, and baddies, the Egyptians who were oppressing them, who were making their lives harder and harder each week and each year. They were oppressed, they were an oppressed people, and their suffering was clear. But for those who've looked at the story, as soon as they were on their way wandering in the desert, they started complaining. They started saying to Moses, have you brought us out here to die? Why are we here? It would have been much better to have remained back in Egypt. And it's almost a sense, if you look at the Israelites, a sense of entitlement, a sense of taking their salvation from Egypt for granted, that they deserved it due to their suffering, that they deserved it due to their status as a chosen people, their identity as Israelites. But now they've recognized, as Andy preached last week on redemption, that God's actually not just saving them from the Egyptians, but actually saving them from themselves, saving them from punishment for their own sin, for their own disobedience against God. And as Andy preached again, they should never have been given a second chance and a second set of stone tablets. It was only through God's grace that that happened. And even in the incident when there was punishment, thousands of people died because of that disobedience. But those who remained, the hundreds of thousands of Israelites who remained, must have had a real sense of having escaped the full force of God's judgment and being given another chance to be God's people. So here, their willing obedience, it comes through a sense of gratitude and probably through a sense of fear as well. They get another chance to be God's people. They get another chance for God to be with them, and they're going to take it. They're going to obey. They're going to make sure that God sticks with them. Many of us who have been Christians for a long time, we may think back to our early days when we had more passion, more sense of having been saved from judgment to life, when we realized that we'd been given a second chance, a chance for life as opposed to a chance for death. Then perhaps that sense of gratitude, it may have faded. We may have a sense of salvation, may become a bit more dim. And we may start to think a little bit about the Israelites, that we have a sense of entitlement to God's blessing. For what we've done, for who we are, that we deserve certain things from God. And I think this passage is a challenge for us to God to move our hearts again. It's a challenge, as David prays in Psalm 51, to return to us the joy of our salvation, to keep coming back to Jesus as the author of our salvation. So we've looked at why the Israelites obeyed, the fact that God moved their hearts to obey, to willingly give the abundant offerings. And I'd like to look a little bit now at what they gave, so the results of God moving their heart, and how they gave. What did their willing offering look like in this context, and what might it look like for us today? So what did they give? If we look at the passage from chapter 35, verse 21, it gives details of what the people brought. So they brought money. It wasn't just money, but certainly they gave money, and Damien will be pleased about that. Or certainly the equivalent at the time. So if you look in verse 24, they gave gold and silver. Verse 27, they gave gems. This was what their money was wrapped up in at that time. And it may seem generous, and it was generous because they gave what they had, but it's worth remembering and looking back in the story that where did they get this money from? Where did they get their gold and silver and gems? If you remember when God took the Israelites out of Egypt, he changed the Egyptians' hearts to give away their possessions. So Israel effectively had plundered Egypt. So all the money, everything that the Israelites had, God had actually given them through changing the Egyptians' hearts when they left Egypt. So it wasn't due to their own hard work, it wasn't due to anything they'd done. It was all that God had given to them in the first place. I think when we think about giving, when we think about what we're offering, it's always good to remember, to reflect that everything we've had has ultimately come from God in the first place. And it's not ours, but it's his. They gave their possessions. There's lots of details about bringing linen, jewelry of all kinds, brooches, earrings, rings and ornaments. They gave linen, yarn, goat hair, skins, all sorts of things there, which are what God required to build the tabernacle. Now, just going back to the golden calf incident, they'd previously used their earrings to build the golden calf. So they'd previously used their possessions to directly disobey God's commandments. And I think this is an interesting symbolic act where God is inviting them to be part of their redemption. Obviously, he's saved them, but he's being inviting them to, in a way, undo what they've done in the past, so to be part of his saving purposes. I think it's reminiscent of when Jesus reinstates Peter in the New Testament, when Peter has disobeyed or denied Jesus three times, and Jesus asks him three times, "Peter, do you love me?" So it's this sense of undoing, it's this sense of being able to put what you'd used for ill for good, for God's purposes. And it's also a reminder again that God chooses to use us. He chooses to include us in bringing about his kingdom, in bringing about his work, as he chose to use the Israelites to build his the place where he would dwell. People also brought their skills. So not just possessions, not just money, but their skills. If we look at verses 25 to 26, on page 95, it says, "Every skilled woman spun with her hands and brought what she had spun, blue, purple, or scarlet yarn. And all the women who were willing and had skill spun the goat hair." So the women were spinning, they were bringing all of their skills that was needed for building of the tabernacle. From verse 30 onwards, we have Bezalel, who's the main person here, who has been filled with God's Spirit, with skill and ability. So if we look at verse 31, "He has filled him with the Spirit of God, with skill, ability, and knowledge in all kinds of crafts, to make artistic designs for work in gold, silver, and bronze, to cut the stones, etc., and to teach others." And I think in this passage of building of the tabernacle, it really is honoring people who have creative gifts. As I was reading it, I felt it was really recognizing the role of those who are artistic, who are creative, who are really have the skills in that side of life. And I was wondering, I mean, if that's you and you're looking at this passage, maybe you long for a new anointing on your skills, on your work, so that God can use what you're doing to his glory. And if that's you, there'll be an opportunity to respond at the end for that. And time, the fourth thing that so people have given, their money, their possessions, their skills, and their time. For chapter 36 and onwards is about how everyone got involved in building the tabernacle. So we've looked at why the Israelites gave, we've looked at what they gave, and finally turning to how did they give, how did they as a community give to this work? How were they moved and mobilized? It is quite an amazing story when God asks people to give specific things and everything comes in. And actually, one thing that would have struck you right at the end is they gave incredibly generously, because Moses says, right, that's enough, don't bring anything else. Now, I can't remember any church I've been in, any organization, when they've said, right, we've got enough resources, we've got enough money, we've got enough people helping out, that's it, just go and do something else. So they were committed, and they weren't overcommitted, but they just wanted to give everything. And I think it's also a fascinating to note on the integrity of everyone working, because they just said, Moses, we've got enough. We're not going to kind of have any more and pretend that we're going to kind of use it for this and then have it for something else. Just, we're honest, we've got enough, just stop giving. And everyone gave. So throughout the passage we've looked at, it talks about verse 21, it says, everyone who was willing. And then 22, men and women alike. And then 23, everyone who had blue or purple, scarlet yarn. Every skilled woman. So everyone was contributing to this. It wasn't that there was a few people who had more, who were more skilled, who had more money, who had more resources and time. It wasn't, I've got nothing to give, God's never going to use me. Absolutely everyone. And this was 600,000 people who had left by this time, who had left Egypt, plus women, plus children. So a couple of million, everyone was contributing. And it was very much a communal project, and they were all investing in their collective life, both for now, but also because this was going to go with them through the 40 years in the desert, and then the Ark of the Covenant was going to be what was put in the temple in Jerusalem, in the Holy of Holies. So this was investing in the future, for them and for future generations, and it was a legacy to them. Now, we're in a building that is a legacy of work that has been done by people from 150 years ago. In building, in people who've given their time to pray, people who've given money, the architects, those who built it, it's a wonderful place. And we have to have it. We have a debt of gratitude for those who have enabled us to be a worshipping community here in Peckham. And people who've kept that vision alive. And we're continuing with that. So with the new site redevelopment, we're invited to be part of building the vision for the next generation to know God's people in presence. We're invited to be part of offering of ourselves to building with a heavenly perspective, building for the future. So they've given generously, everyone's giving. They've also given freely. And this is, if you look at verse 20, this is not how fundraising is done at the moment. So it says, then the whole Israelite community withdrew from Moses' presence. So Moses tells people what is needed, and then he says, go away and think and pray about it. Now, many of you may have been to various fundraising events where there's a big push. Your heartstrings need to be tugged. I was listening to an article or a program on Radio 4 last week about charity fundraising. It basically says, go for the emotion, go for individual people that people think, I can give money and I can help that person. That's the way you get people moved. Moses did not use those techniques. He hadn't read the right books. He basically said, this is what we need, go away. And this is when God moved people's hearts to give. There wasn't coercion. There was no undue pressure. There was no emotional manipulation. There was no soft music. There was no promises of cars and houses. It was people with God praying through, thinking through what they wanted to give, how they wanted to contribute. And the final point, and actually possibly the key point, is that people gave willingly. It very clearly stands out when reading the passage. And if you go through, I'll just pick out some of the points from chapter 35. So verse 5, the instructions, everyone who is willing is to bring an offering to the Lord of gold, silver, and bronze. Verse 21, everyone who was willing, whose heart was moved, came and brought an offering. Verse 22, all who are winning, men and women alike, came and brought. Verse 26, all the women who were willing and had the skill spun the goat hair. 29, all the Israelite men and women who were willing brought to the Lord freewill offerings. And then chapter 36, verse 2, is that Moses summoned Bezalel and Aholiab and every skilled person to whom the Lord had given ability and who was willing. This is very clearly a willing offering to the Lord. There was no coercion. There was no resentment in getting involved. There wasn't even any sort of obligation. I mean, admittedly, it's part of the covenant, but it wasn't as if they were forced to do it. It was a free will offering, and people's hearts were moved to give. Now, I find this a huge challenge, if I admit. I actually sometimes think I'm quite a generous person. I tithe. I've got that sorted. But actually, what I realise is that I've actually got my life in compartments. So 10% to God, the rest is mine to do whatever I want with it. And I often close myself down to my heart being moved to actually a compassionate response to people around, which is why it's useful to be married to Ali, because she responds compassionately and has a big heart for everyone around. But when I see, for example, an appeal for the Horn of Africa drought at the moment, basically my initial response is, I've sorted out my 10%, that's it, my heart is closed. Even if people are doing fundraising events, I just kind of think, I'm sorted, I'm not going to get involved in that. And although not always true, but I have asked God to help to move me out of my comfort zone, to actually, so that I can respond, first of all, with my heart, as the Israelites do, to allow God to move my heart to offer everything I have, and that he changes my heart and fills it with compassion. It's also true, and has been, for how I see my time. So I was a missionary a number of years back in Peru, and I remember right at the start, I went with a very Western view to how you divide your life. Well, you have your work life, you have your social life, we've got all our rights to holiday and everything, and your social and your family life, and then you've got your church life. And I basically decided how much time I was willing to give to being a missionary, how much time I needed for myself, and how much time I might do kind of work and other things. And I remember probably the first Saturday I was there, people said, the first Friday, they said, can you come and do a workshop tomorrow? We've got a whole day, we need your input, it'd be really useful. And I basically, in my head, said, Saturday's my day off, and I just said, no, sorry, I can't do it. And actually, that happened, embarrassingly, quite a few times. But I was really challenged by the people I worked with, whose default option, when there was an opportunity to help, was yes. So then, and then they would work out how they could do it or what it would involve. And I kind of thought my view was I was already doing enough. This is my time. God's time has been sorted in a different way. And since then, I've been praying that my default motivation will actually be yes. That when there's something I can do, when there's somebody in need, when there's some way to offer what I have, my default option will be yes. That my heart will respond willingly before my over-compartmentalized mind says no and shuts down the possibilities of getting involved. Now, some of you may have it all sorted. Some of you here might think, I'm doing what God has asked me to do. I'm offering my time, my resources, my money. I'm giving joyfully, and I'm really happy with where I am. That is wonderful. We can all learn from you, and long may that continue. Others may be thinking, well, I'm actually doing far too much already for the church. Don't ask me to do any more. Don't try and make me feel guilty. I'm already stressed. And I think we've probably all passed through that at certain times. But I think if you're in a situation when you're maybe feeling stressed, you feel as though you can't or don't want to give anymore, and there's no joy in serving, you may even be resentful, I think this passage about giving willingly is actually a challenge to step back and think, to step back and look at our priorities, and to look about actually whether we need to change anything. Maybe you need to step back and do less. You may be doing too much, or you may be doing what God hasn't called you to do. This may sound controversial, and I'm certainly not judging anyone, but I just know so many Christians, even church leaders, who get exhausted, who get resentful, who are maybe doing things in their own strength, and who've lost inspiration. So if that's you, maybe it is time to ask God to restore the joy of your salvation, to give you a willing spirit, and to show you how he wants you to be involved in building his kingdom. For others, it may be that God's challenging you to do more, that you've been resisting calls to use your skills. You've been resisting calls to serve, to use your money for God's work, to use your possessions for other people to enjoy. Maybe it's time to pray that God will make you more willing for him to change your change what you give. Dietrich Bonhoeffer challenges that we must be ready to allow ourselves to be interrupted by God. A challenge to move out of our comfort zones and to rely on God, to open our hearts to God. Are we willing to have our priorities changed? Are we willing to have our giving changed? Our use of time changed? You might have planned a quiet evening watching TV and a friend who's in need calls. Are you willing to have your evening interrupted? You may have plans for how you use your savings. Are you willing for God to interrupt those? You may have plans for how you use your car, your house, your possessions. Are you willing for those to be interrupted, to respond to someone in need, to respond to God's priorities for building his kingdom? Now, a passage like this is clearly relevant to what we're doing as a church in terms of our site redevelopment and the plans we have over the next few years. We plan to invest significant amounts of money in making these buildings fit for the kind of ministry that we think God is calling us to in Peckham, to serve the people of Peckham, to bring hope and life to ourselves and to others around us. And as we think about the site redevelopment, maybe now is the time to be thinking about what God is calling each of us to bring. As individuals, as families, because clearly individual financial and other and time decisions affect families, and as a church. It's time for us to ask God to move our hearts so that we willingly contribute what we decide to contribute, and that we don't contribute out of resentment, out of obligation, but that out of a willing and giving and joyful spirit. And it's our responsibility to seek what God means, what this means for each one of us. So just to bring a few of those things together, and if Al, you want to come up. So we've seen that from the passage that God has changed the Israelites' hearts to obey him, to give him their time, their money, their possessions, and their skills, and that they were motivated really by a strong desire to have God with them and through a sense of gratitude from having been saved from judgment. They gave freely, they gave willingly, and they gave generously, and everyone had a role. So there are lots of things there, and we're going to have a chance to respond individually in a minute through a song that Al and the band will play. But just to go back to maybe some of the things that I mentioned in terms of the challenges or the encouragements from this passage. It may be that you are creative, that you either work in the arts or that actually one of your hobbies, you just love doing creative things, and you would love to offer your skills to God for an anointing, for what, how he might be able to use them. Maybe you are challenged to offer yourselves to God so that he can move your heart to give more willingly, whether that's giving more, whether it's giving less, whether it's giving differently, but actually that the emphasis on moving your heart to give willingly of everything that you are and everything you have. Maybe you're challenged to be more open to be interrupted by God, that actually to allow him into the priorities you've given for your time, for your possessions, for your money. It may even be that you have some resentment you need to confess to God about the way you've been serving, or that you feel as though you've been serving in your own strength, and you want to stop that, and you want to serve in the freedom and the joy that God's Spirit gives us. And it may actually be that you don't want to respond now, but you want to go away, as Moses encouraged us, to pray about it and think through what God has touched you.